You're listening to the Berkman Audio Fishbowl from the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University. Each week, we feature conversations with leading cyber scholars, entrepreneurs, activists, and policymakers as they explore the bleeding edge of the internet and technology, democracy, law, and society. For more information on the Berkman Center and for more programs like this, visit cyber.law.harvard.edu.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much. Thanks for coming. I just thought I'd start off by saying that this is exciting for us because this is truly a Berkman collaboration. So Aaron and I were both fellows a couple of years ago at Berkman, and that's when we decided to work together on this project. So it's really a Berkman project. And in true collaborative form, we're going to present it together. You should feel free to interrupt us if we say something where you'd like clarification. So Aaron will start with motivation for the project, research questions. I'll talk a little bit about the data and some of the findings, and then I'll pass it back to Aaron.
Sounds good. Thanks, Esther. Okay. So the place this paper started was really with these questions about what the Obama campaign meant for political engagement, and particularly the relationship between the internet and political engagement among young people. And so Esther has this amazing survey data about a lot of college students in Chicago, which she will tell you more about in a moment. And so what we were really interested in was to come up with a way to test this idea, to do a pretty strong test for the idea that, you know, the Obama campaign had really changed the game in terms of young people's online engagement. And so we thought, what better place to look at this than a bunch of Chicago college students? And in particular, what we wanted to see was whether internet use patterns matter, which is something that previous research on young people's political engagement hadn't really included data about. So Esther will tell you more about what our data has to say about that in a minute. So we read a lot about what previous research had found on this, and the main findings are probably familiar to a lot of you in some ways. In various forms. The big story of young voter engagement over the past 50 years in the US is generally summarized as a pretty sad one, insofar as there's been generally a downward trend in terms of young voters becoming increasingly disaffected. That may have been changing in the past 8 years, but long-term trend seems to be generally downwards. And past research in terms of what the internet has meant for this and what people's use of the internet has meant in relation to this trend has seemed to suggest that the internet is usually a weapon of the strong. Or in other words, the people who have greater social capital, greater resources, come from privileged backgrounds, tend to make more and better use of the internet. And that the relationship between the internet use and political engagement only holds for those people from more privileged backgrounds. So the other piece of the previous research has been this kind of argument about whether the internet impacts political engagement directly, or whether it affects people's political engagement uniformly, or whether there's some other more complicated process. So kind of what factors intervene, what processes matter more than others, and there hasn't been a lot of agreement on that in terms of the social science sources that we looked at. So that's where we started. And we decided to think about political engagement in terms of four specific outcomes. So I'm just going to walk through these a little bit as sort of a preface to what the models that we actually ran. The first is what we called online political cognitive engagement. And what that translates into is the extent to which you pay attention to or participate in sort of political information seeking and political communication on the internet. And the second one is civic engagement, and that's, we're really interested here in sort of traditional forms of civic engagement. So volunteer organizations, participation in community, things that people don't necessarily do online, but that they may do online, but, you know, sort of the classic, if you've read Bowling Alone, Bob Putnam's book on civic engagement, social capital, you'll have an idea what we were thinking of in this area. Of course, we're interested in voting as an outcome as well. That's the sort of obvious one. And we were also interested in political action more broadly defined. So Esther will have more about what specifically went into that measure. But as you can see from the arrows here, the other piece of this is that we were using, the way we were running the models is we were trying to incorporate these in a cumulative way. So implicitly what that means is we were assuming that certain things about people's attributes might associate with the extent to which they engage politically online, which in turn might associate with the extent to which they, you know, are civically engaged, which in turn might associate with the extent to which they vote or engage in other forms of political action. So that's the kind of 10,000-foot overview of what we were doing, and pass it to Esther for the data piece.
Okay, so now I'll tell you about the data that we're using. So some of you know about my work and you know that I've done a lot of data collection at the University of Illinois Chicago. So I'll just say a few words about why there. I've never been affiliated with that institution myself. So it's not about just simply surveying my students. The reason that I've been studying students at UIC is that it's an extremely diverse group of students. It's one of the most ethnically diverse campuses in the nation when it comes to research universities. And so that is helpful when one is interested in the kinds of questions that drive my work, which have to do with social inequality with respect to internet uses. So that's why we use a data set from UIC. What we do is, or what I did with my research team at Northwestern, is going to a class at UIC that everybody is required to take on campus every first year. So this way we're not biasing towards some type of class that people might be interested in taking. I'm very grateful for the first year writing program for working with me on this. It is a paper pencil survey, which is less and less common. A lot of surveys are done online these days. The reason that I continue to use paper pencil surveys is that a lot of the outcomes of interest have to do with internet uses, and so I don't want to mix the mode of data collection with the research questions of interest. So that way I want to remove questions such as who has access to the internet more, who's more comfortable taking these surveys online, from the mode of data collection. So that's why it's paper pencil survey. It might sound simple, one course, paper pencil, going to class. It's actually 86 different sections, so it's a lot of work to collect all this data. I just wanted to clarify that. Okay, so these data come from the spring of 2009, where we had over 1,000 first years take the survey with quite a high response rate. We today focus on just 1,001 of those students who were actually eligible to vote, because we're not really interested in the students right now who are not eligible to vote, since that's one of our important outcomes. Okay, so just we'll tell you a little bit here about what the sample looks like. So, sorry.
Yes. Were those students who were eligible to vote in 2008, or are they ones who were eligible to vote starting in 2009?
This was for the 2008 elections. So the majority of the students are 18 or 19. They're young. We have a bit more females than males in the sample. Parental education is the variable we use as a proxy for socioeconomic status. You can see that almost half of the sample is first-generation college students. Again, it's a pretty diverse sample, and also quite diverse on race and ethnicity. That said, we do want to remind you that this is a specific population, so we don't want to suggest that our findings are generalizable to all of the U.S., but we think that it's a very interesting population, especially given that it's Obama's hometown. So 62% of the students in the sample voted in the presidential elections, which compares very well with the figures nationally for that age group and education level. So this is actually, in that sense, quite representative, very similar numbers. We collected data on what we call political capital, what the literature suggests are variables that might matter when it comes to political engagement, just so we can control for these. So one has to do with partisanship. We have information on people's level of political interest and also political knowledge. And we relied on pretty standard ways to measure these. If people are interested in more detail, we can get into that.
Would range be like rank your partisanship from?
Okay, so I guess I'll get into how we measure these. The partisanship question specifically came from, or variable, came from a question that actually asked people about their ideology from very liberal all the way to very conservative, where we coded very liberal and very conservative as 3 on the partisanship, liberal and conservative as 2, and middle of the road as 1. So we recoded that question. Okay. This is definitely the wired generation, so people talk about this cohort as people who've grown up with technology, and indeed we do find that when it comes to very basic levels of internet use, they've really been online for many years, and so there are no questions of a core digital divide when it comes to this population, so that's something that we've pretty much controlled for by looking at this group. However, when it comes to more nuanced measures of internet use, there is some variability in the group. So these are measures that, again, the literature would suggest might matter for internet use. Some of it, measures that I've introduced, for example, people's level of skill in using the internet. Just to clarify, the range here refers to what the options were in the survey questions. Those are not the minimum and maximum values of the responses. So, for example, everyone's been online already by the time of the study. Okay, so on to our important question of what we call online political cognitive engagement. So the way we operationalized this was to look at a few questions that have to do specifically with engaging with political types of content online. And we look at two types. One has to do with blogs in particular. Are you reading blogs that relate to politics? But it's actually a pretty broad category, including economics, law, policy. That's how those were the words used in the survey. Are you commenting on these types of blogs? Also looking at whether you visit websites with these topics and whether you engage with content in a more active way of this sort, as in, do you forward, do you post, do you respond to this kind of content? And so these are the figures, which we show you because this is such a central variable in the study. So note that the most of the numbers under never are quite high, actually, right? So we have a lot of people in the sample, a lot of these young adults who are not really engaging with this type of material online, and especially when it comes to the more active form of commenting, of engaging with the material by forwarding. Those numbers are very high, meaning that it's really just 1/5 at maximum who are doing any of that work. Mary?
I missed it. You said it. Did you give some examples of what you meant by political or economic or law policy?
No, this is what it said. Yeah. So what we then did was we created a summary variable of this information. That's just a binary variable where if you did any of these things weekly or more often, that's where you get a 1 on that 0-1 binary variable, which is about half the sample. So then we ran a logistic regression with information about people's background, political capital measures, and some of the internet measures to see what relates to online political cognitive engagement. And instead of showing you the raw numbers from the regression, we'll came up with this representation. Let's see if it works. Basically, what we found that women are less likely to engage with this kind of material online. Race and ethnicity, as well as parental education, which is our proxy for socioeconomic status, do not seem to matter, don't relate. Interest in politics does. This is not shocking. You're interested in politics. You're more likely to be engaging with this kind of material on the web. And also, how often you're online and your skill are positively related to online political cognitive engagement. Next, we looked at civic engagement. As Aaron mentioned earlier, we rely on fairly traditional measures of these. These are specifically what we asked on the survey and what we use data on. And this is how prevalent these types of activities, engagements were in the sample. And what we did here was we added up the number of these that you did, either ever or in the cases where you see in parentheses, few times a week or more. And so here we have an interval outcome from 0 to 4. Yes?
Back one, did you control women and internet skill together?
Well, it's a regression, so it's all in the model at the same time. Is that what you're asking?
Whether the negative effect was independent of or dependent on internet skill kind of.
So actually what we did with the models was we first ran a model with just the background variables, and then we added the internet variables. And I remember for sure that when we add the internet variables, that is a negative relationship. So controlling for skill.
Yes.
So now the outcome is this 0 to 4 interval variable of civic engagement, your level of civic engagement. And here, gender doesn't seem to matter. However, Asian Americans seem to be more engaged than whites. Parental education matters in the sense that those whose parents have higher levels of education engage more civically. Interest in politics is related. OPC engagement refers to our online political cognitive engagement measure. So there's a positive relationship there with engaging online in political types of content and being civically engaged, whether online or offline. And internet experiences when it comes to autonomy, your use of social network sites, and skill are all positively related. Nicole.
Could you talk a little bit about why you decided to focus on blog as for the political engagement? As opposed to news groups or chat rooms or...
So actually the latter is included in the other. So it's four measures, two types. One has to do specifically with blogs, and the other is a much more general question that just said, when do you go online to look at these types of content? Which is actually inclusive of, it could be news groups, it could be just a newspaper website, anything. So that's very inclusive. We specifically just highlighted blogs as a separate question, just to focus in on that because it's gotten so much attention, but that's like an add-on.
Okay.
It's not replacing other types of...
Okay, so that measure there...
This one measure, it's all those four. So reading, looking at blogs, other types of political content, plus commenting on blogs, plus forwarding an article you read in the New York Times, like all of that is supposed to be included.
Okay.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, another question.
No, not at all. No, nothing.
Good question.
Nothing.
Thank you for asking.
Sorry.
Yeah.
That's just trying to fit it all in.
I have a quick question. By civic, do you mean secular? So you're not making any distinction in terms of whether or not they're involved through a religious organization?
We don't. It's exactly the questions you saw on that slide. It's just, so it included, was it meetings, like attending meetings?
Yeah.
And we don't say...
We don't say what kind of organization.
Yeah, we don't say if it's a meeting of, what type? It's just any organization you might belong to. That's how the literature tends to measure it.
So it could include church groups?
It could. It's how the person...
How they interpret it. Yeah.
Woman?
Do you have a breakdown of what the Asian American backgrounds were? Which countries?
We actually do. We don't look at that in this paper. In the data set, I do have information on the country of origin of the parents.
Because it's
so I could look at that.
Big difference between like Cambodia or the Philippines,
yes,
or China.
That's legitimate. And in fact, that's a unique aspect of this data set that I actually do have those data. We usually don't have those data at all. We haven't included that. It's something we could do because actually the size in the sample is pretty large.
Especially if there's greater engagement among Asian Americans, I'd be very curious to know how that breaks down.
How it breaks down, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Groups that are lumped together in that category.
Yes. And again, in most data sets, there are not enough Asian Americans to do that, nor is there data about that, but we do actually have it, so we could do that.
Great.
Yes.
What about the first generation, second generation? It's quite different. I mean, Asian American.
It could be, right. And we do have data on where the parents were born. Mm-hmm. So we could also do that.
But definitely, those young people are born in the United States. Or
were they? We have data on that too. We haven't included it. We could look at that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we do have data on that. And I will say, I mean, I don't know the literature here for the Asian American population. A completely different paper that I've worked on from the same data set that has to do with health information seeking. We actually looked at this for the Hispanic students in the sample and looked at whether the students were first generation or second generation, and we did find differences between those two groups. So it is definitely something that could be interesting to look at. Yes. Okay, so now we're on to voting, and I'll pass it back to Aaron.
Very good. So Esther already spoke about the proportion of the students in our sample who voted, and the fact that that is consistent with the national level for college students. This gives you a little bit more sense about how many were registered but did not vote and how many were not registered. So again, this is just a 1-0 outcome, so it's a logistic model. And here's the way that broke down. So positive relationship with being female, And then there's a, it's a little hard to see this one. So the African-American students were more likely to vote, according to the model. There's a stronger association. Whereas in this case, Asian-American students, there was a negative association.
Was that based on, was that compared to each compared other in the survey? Oh, okay.
What, in the regression, I'm sorry.
But was it, say, compared to whites nationally or compared to?
No, just the people in the survey.
Just the people in the survey, Yeah, and these were using basically the census categories now, is that right? Are these the current census categories?
Yeah, the way we asked about race ethnicity is how the census asks about that.
Yeah, another question.
Did your survey ask whether the student, whether the students were U.S. citizens and eligible to register to vote, or were all
there? Yeah, well, it did, and the so the whole sample that we're using for all of these models was only the eligible to vote population. So they both had to be eligible to vote and of age, and I mean, in all the things that eligible to vote means in the U.S.
Yeah, we purposefully didn't ask the whole list of questions that would excuse you from voting. We just asked, were you eligible to vote? Just so we don't need to know the details of why you might not be eligible to vote.
Yeah. So parental education, again, no association. All of our forms of political capital had a positive relationship with whether or not you voted. Civic engagement as well. Both of those, I should mention, are very consistent with past research in this area, so suggesting that some things don't change. And interestingly, our online political cognitive engagement measures, which if you remember from the civic engagement model, had had a positive relationship with civic engagement, have no significant relationship with voting. So that's an interesting thing that we'll come back to a little bit. And finally, no relationship with internet experiences. So all of those great measures of skill and autonomy and use, no association. So then for our final set of models here, we looked at this broader definition of political action. And this gives you a sense of what we considered to fall under that umbrella. Again, these are fairly standard measures that we're using that are drawn from previous literature in this area. And this is how the sample broke down along those lines. You can get a sense of what people have done more and less frequently. And the way we wound up recoding that into a single outcome is we basically, again, turned it into a one or a zero, where if you've done any of these things in the past 2 years, we considered that to be someone who's politically active. The number here, the results here are such that that winds up being a pretty strong majority of the population, but basically that was the best way we've had of breaking it down. And it made sense logically to hang together that way. So here are the results of that model. We see no relationship with gender in the political action outcome. No relationship with race and ethnicity. Both of those are very interesting and actually unusual. No relationship with parental education, also very interesting and unusual. Political knowledge, positive association. Civic engagement, positive association again. Online political cognitive engagement, no association. And here, internet experiences actually do have a relationship, in particular, social network site use and skill. So what do we take away from all that? I think at a concrete level, you can see that internet use matters for all of our outcomes except for voting. So that does suggest that these measures of skill and autonomy and use would be valuable to take account of when we're thinking about the relationship between the internet and political action, at least political action broadly defined as we're thinking about it here. The second piece is that last slide, that last model, the fact that SNS use and web skills are associated with political action, the SNS use finding is consistent with previous research. The web skills thing suggests that web skills play an important role in mediating that relationship. So we thought that was important. And then finally, and maybe stepping back a little bit, I think to return to our research questions here, we can see that what this is characterized by is not sort of, the internet, just having access to the internet uniformly does not give rise to uniform political engagement in any way. There are a lot of complicated indirect and differential relationships where different groups are engaging to different extents depending on, say, their use of social network sites or their skills or their background or the extent to which they engage in certain kinds of civic and political activities. And finally, back to the question of whether there were Obama effects. When we talked about that, at first we came up with a series of things that that might look like. And in brief, we didn't include a separate slide on this, but in brief, it was basically the question of whether just spending more time online and spending more time engaging online in various ways would lead you to vote or to participate in political action. And basically, we don't see anything in our data set that suggests that that was really the case. What we see is a story that's largely consistent with the weapon of the strong story that's been found in other work. However, there was one important area where we saw that relationship break down, and that was that last model with political action as the outcome. And if you remember there, what we saw was that skill and SNS usage mattered, but all those various indicators about gender, race, and parental education had no relationship. And that was very unusual. So if there was an Obama effect, it was in fact that we didn't have any findings in that particular model, but it's a pretty minor thing that would require a lot more investigation to be confident about. So I think that's where we end up, and just a special thanks to the funders that supported the research and to Esther's current and former students who did a lot of the hard work of administering and cleaning up the results of the survey data. So, all right.
Thanks.
Thanks very much.
Okay, great. Sweet. So I think they'll bring in the sandwiches, and if people have questions or comments or...
Yeah, you had a question right there.
Yeah, I have a question. one of the measures of overall engagement that you sort of rolled into one as a binary one was whether or not someone had signed a petition online and or had taken action that way, and that's 65%. Do you wonder if you take that out of the equation, if you'll have more correlation between some of these things? If you take out, because it's a very low impact kind of thing, so it's as simple as clicking a like on a petition, for example, right? Compared to, say, volunteering, donating, which are much more, they're rare, but also much more likely to actually be political action, rather than a friend asked me to click on this link and I didn't.
First, I'd like to clarify something about the data, which is that this actually was not restricted to online.
Okay.
It could have been that you actually signed a petition on the street somewhere. Right. So just to clarify.
It could have gone either way.
Yeah.
Right. But still, I think your question stands.
The question still stands. I just wanted to clarify part.
And signing a petition at the grocery store is not necessarily fundamentally different. Questionable. I guess there are two ways to answer. There are two ways to answer your question. One is to say that I think when we designed the models that we were running, part of our concern was to be kind of conceptually coherent.
Okay.
And so in terms of sitting down and thinking through what we wanted our outcome of political action to capture, our justification was that this is a non-electoral form of participation. We wanted the umbrella outcome to capture that. And we knew it was somewhat kind of participation light, but we wanted to still capture that. The other piece is that I think I don't think we ran a separate model that included, we didn't try to break down the individual outcomes, in part because of that desire to be coherent with our concepts and consistent with past research in this area. So I don't think we've looked at specific results without that, but it would be interesting to do so.
We could do it.
Yeah, we could definitely break it down. It's a great question.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, speaking from experience when talking to students, there tends to be waves of when politics are cool, or engaging with politics is cool, and when it's actually not that cool, and it's got nerdy, blah, 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 blah. So I was wondering, in terms of the data, in terms of social desirability effects that you might have in there, I was wondering whether you considered whether or not desirability effect, where students were actually thinking of themselves as political beings, whether that was something good and whether this changed with the Obama effect, where politics became cool.
I think that's definitely a very real, and actually, I've done some other unrelated research into social desirability in other settings, so it's a. It's definitely a real and big issue, and it's one that's hard hard/impossible, I think, to address with survey data alone. So, I mean, beyond taking people's word for it, we don't have any ways of controlling for that in this set of results that I'm aware of, unless.
Well, I have a clarification question about this.
Yeah, yeah.
So are you saying that in this particular election, the answers to these questions would have had a different type of social desirability than in every other survey that people do?
I'd say that if you run this in a longitudinal way, then sort of 3 years earlier and 3 years later, you might get a different sort of desirability effect, on which essentially reflects whether or not politics is perceived as doing something new or not.
Yeah, I mean,
so I guess that's sort of the Obama effect that we're wondering about, I guess. That's
it's part of it. It could definitely be part of it. I mean, it's part of it in a sort of funny way, because what we're saying is, if we take everybody's word for it and the way that they respond to surveys, do we see any effect? And what you're pointing out, which I think is a real possibility, but one which presumably every survey run on anybody in the U.S., at least any potential Obama-supporting population, which, to be fair, there are plenty of conservatives in this data. It's not that this was an exclusively, you know, left-leaning crew. You know, it's presumably an effect that could be going on anywhere at any survey, in any set of survey results. So to that extent, I think, you know, the pieces of this that I take some, that I draw some confidence from, are that our findings, for example, in terms of the response to whether or not people actually voted, the results are consistent with national levels, and that there's been other research finding that those levels that people that self-reports for that kind of thing are actually they correlate very closely with behavior. So that bodes well. But again, yeah, I think it's hard to distinguish that with access to just survey data. It's very hard. Yeah, right. That's for when you want to do the ethnographic study of the entire.
Or the longitudinal.
I will add that we actually do have data on close to half of these students for 2010, and whether they voted in the gubernatorial primaries in Illinois. So we have those data, and I am trying to secure funding so that I can go back to this cohort next year in 2012. Well, that will not. There won't be a vote in there at that point. But because in the spring, basically, I want to catch them as they're graduating to see about some outcomes. If I get more funding, I'd love to follow up even further. That's really up to funding at this point. I do have information. I do have their home mailing addresses. So them being in school is no longer, that's not actually relevant for my data collection anymore in terms of the mode. And in fact, by 2010, 10% are no longer at UIC. So, which again shows that the socioeconomic status is more diverse than it might seem. So we have a lot of hands up. I don't know, Mary, were you going to follow up on this? Or yeah, go ahead.
Related in that, I wonder if there's a way to parse out, not necessarily errors in self-reporting, but changes in their access to some of that political action. So thinking about when you see a rise in SNS really being a place where you circulate petitions versus other places to find petitions. And I don't know how your data would get at that, but really thinking about what shifts in access happen, particularly entering a college environment versus a high school environment, that would have spiked for this cohort particularly would have spiked with the Obama effect, of how much opportunity there would have been to do some of those things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, I do think some of the data captures that, because they've been in college for over a semester by the time we are collecting the data, right? So things that college may afford them to do, they could be doing already. That said, I do think one area that would be really intriguing to follow up on here is what it is exactly that's going on social network sites that they're doing. I didn't specify what those data were about, but basically that variable is simply, do you check people's status updates and do you post status updates to yourself with some regularity? That's a pretty crude measure of SNS use for our purposes. It would be great if we had some more nuance there. SNS use specifically for political types of purposes, for example. That would be neat to have. We've had lots of hands up. Roman, go ahead.
I might be misunderstanding your final sort of simplified version of your results, but it seems somewhat paradoxical that internet use doesn't correlate to voting, but internet use does correlate with political action. Doesn't voting correlate, or should we assume that voting correlates with political action, or is that a false assumption? Or is the data more nuanced in a way that you can't simply make a chain rule and come out with a paradox?
So, they do relate. Political action and voting are related.
Okay, so they are.
They're related in the data.
So, am I correct in understanding somewhat of a paradox here, or is that just an artifact of how the data is filtered?
It's nothing to do with what we did with the data. I think it might just be a paradox in the way that political engagement and action work among American young people. I mean, I think voting is, at least qualitatively, a different kind of engagement in the United States than signing petitions, donating, volunteering for campaigns. And I think part of what we find is that it's reflected insofar as the kinds of people who tend to vote more look a little different than the kinds of people who do those other things more. So I'm not sure it's a paradox, strictly speaking, but it's definitely, it's interesting to disaggregate them and think about them separately, I think, for exactly this reason. And it suggests that some of the things that, you know, some of the factors that drive whether people vote or not, you know, may not necessarily overlap with the factors that determine whether people are engaging in a broader sense. I'm hesitant to draw it. I don't want to like extrapolate from these to claim that any of this was clearly causal in any way, but I think that it's suggestive in that regard. So that's the, yeah.
We should mention that the R square of these models is around, I think the best fit is what explains 12% of the variance.
Yeah, it's not humongous.
I mean, there are lots of things that we're not including in the models that we have no data on that matter. So we're just capturing a relatively small portion of the variance. To be sure, most internet use research, that's about as much as you're going to get. So in that sense, we're in line with research. But there's obviously other things going on, too, that we're just not capturing. Yes?
Follow up on this question about voting. It goes back to the what is eligibility. Would a student be considered eligible or self-identify as eligible if they had moved from out of state?
Oh, you know what? This is a point I had meant to mention. Yeah, it wasn't on the site. I forgot. The vast majority of the students in the sample are from Chicagoland. So specifically from the Chicago area. We haven't included it here. We have the data. Mm-hmm. Almost everybody is from Chicagoland. Just literally just a handful who aren't. So that's actually not really a concern with this data set.
Yeah.
That said, the question was about the presidential election. So they would say they're eligible, even if
you can
not.
Be from.
People are more likely to vote or not when
they're away, and that's a very legitimate question. Which is why I should have mentioned that almost everybody in the sample is from Illinois. Yes.
Yeah. I'm just wondering how active is the Democratic Republic or Independent Club in the university? How active are they?
I have no idea.
It's a good question, but
I don't know.
Could you repeat the question?
Sorry. The question was how active the Democratic Club is at the university.
Yeah, or how various party groups might or might not be.
No information on that.
There has been, I know there's at least one study that was done at Northwestern about sort of get out the vote outreach efforts by specific groups and their effect on the student body there and their participation rates. But we definitely don't have that information for this sample. So it would be interesting to look and see whether there are findings in that area.
And that work by Michael Pechkin was actually especially focused on the idea that at Northwestern, a lot of the students are from out of state. And so they're trying to get people registered. That wouldn't be that easy. But again, with our population, they're local. So there isn't that extra hurdle. Mm-hmm. Yes?
You said you had later data about the gubernatorial race. Did you look at any other voting, as in like smaller level local voting, or are you looking at like the larger level voting?
I have no data on other types of voting. No.
Yeah, and so far with this, we've only looked at the 2009.
Yeah, we haven't actually looked at results. The 2010 data. Yeah. Yes, you had a question here? Yeah.
So there was a study that came out recently showing that something like 85% of contributors to Wikipedia were male. And I was wondering if you have looked into, since you do collect data on gender, if you saw anything similar related to online political participation in your sample set?
So, I mean, we
Yeah, I don't remember. Here we can go back to.
Here we just have the models. We don't have the breakdown by gender. I could tell you that Wikipedia contributions, I actually have very nuanced data.
Yeah, Esther has done wonderful research on exactly this topic, which is elsewhere.
And in particular in the 2010 data set, I have very detailed information separately. Have you edited? Have you started a new entry? Uh-huh. Have you looked at the history? Like, I have about 6 or 7 different measures,
okay.
And it's unbelievably gendered. I mean, it's the data are almost even more extreme than what you're quoting.
The Wikimedia survey.
I could even pull up I know I have a slide.
It's
afterwards,
in there somewhere.
I'll show you.
Yeah, yeah.
I have a slide that actually has those data, and it's remarkable. I mean, we're talking extremely large differences. From the 2009 data set, I remember the figures were just generally asking, have you edited a Wikipedia entry? 29% of the men said they had, and 8% of the women said they had. So that's a huge difference. But when we look at the specifics of edit versus add versus all those things, there's some even larger differences. So yeah, those are huge. Now, as to political, I mean, I guess on these slides, we don't have the specific breakdown, but yeah.
Gender did matter. I mean, this was the one
model,
that speaks to that. Yeah.
Even when you control for all these other factors,
mm-hmm.
women are still doing it less. So,
is it
like
as drastic a difference?
No, it's not as drastic. No.
Yeah. I don't remember offhand
those
the magnitude.
Those contribution
of
types of activities from my prior research, and actually some of it, I think I talked about in my last Berkman talk.
Mm-hmm.
They're always gendered, that women are contributing less. On pretty much everything I've looked at. And one of the critiques I got at that point, I looked at contributing to Wikipedia, I looked at posting videos, I looked at
blogging,
creating quizzes. Maybe that was the one that wasn't, there was no gender difference.
That's right.
As in like Facebook quizzes probably.
Right.
And then the one critique I kept getting was, oh, but you didn't ask about fan fiction. So in 2010, I asked about fan fiction, and women are still reporting less for that too.
Wow.
So, now, and then you can start asking, well, is there some misreporting here? But I can't really come up, I mean, as a survey researcher with a lot of experience using survey, I can't really come up with a reason why systematically that would be misreported. So if people have ideas, let me know, but I haven't been able to say that there's like a reason that would be misreported in that, you know, biased way.
You're using these different measures. How does it compare in terms of receptive use versus productive use? As in, you know, your concept is online political cognitive engagement. So does that include receptive use, as in, you know, reading?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It's inclusive of both in this case.
And then does the data suggest that women actually read less political news online?
I don't remember offhand. I'm sure that we looked at that, but in just a descriptive way at some point.
Yeah, here's the.
I mean, we could, if you hang around for a few minutes afterwards, we can check
the
crosstab. But I mean, I don't know offhand what it was.
Because the Wikipedia information is.
It's production.
Specifically production.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I can say, so specifically for Wikipedia, in terms of have you read a Wikipedia entry,
mm-hmm.
it's like 99% for both men and women, so that's universal.
Yeah.
For Wikipedia in particular. For these measures, I don't remember what their cross-tabs are.
We can find it
may be that men do a little bit more, but I don't recall major variation there. David?
I understand that you took partisanship as a single measure of strength, not of where you are. But if you put back in, I don't know if you have the data, but if you put back in left versus right.
Ideology.
Yeah. Does it make a difference?
Have we done that?
I don't think we did do that.
I don't think we did that.
In part because I think like the previous work in this area, I mean, the motivation for doing it the way we did it is just the previous work in this area has been overwhelming that it's partisanship, not ideology, that matters. But in this particular case, I think you raise a good point that given the geography and the population involved, it would be worth going back. So, yeah, we haven't done it yet.
Something we could do.
It's a great idea.
It indicates something about the Obama effect.
Absolutely.
Although
yeah,
you
yeah,
never
right.
know, he could be, you know, energizing the brain as well. So.
I think that reminds the same question, but I was wondering, in the data, did you see that there was the people who identified as very passionately
one thing as opposed to another voted more.
So that's the partisanship variable?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think so.
We do control for that.
No, it does. If we go back to the model for voting, if we go to the voting outcome model. Yes.
So, that's not a shock either. That you found that the more partisan.
The people who are more. So, the plus sign next to political capital and the fact that partisanship is listed there means that people who are more partisan were more likely to vote.
And was there any difference between men and women there?
So, the idea is that we're including information about all these variables at the same time in the model.
Mm.
So, holding one constant. The other is significant.
Yeah, the way to read it is sort of like all other things being equal, women were more likely to vote than were like more likely to have voted according to this data than men.
So if you take
all
men
other
and
things
women
being equal,
who are
right.
at the equal level of partisanship, the women are more likely to vote than the men.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's sort of the way to read these. Although you have to be careful with that more likely piece because that suggests that it's linear causal.
Yeah, I mean,
and that's not
it's complicated. Right. Lots of variables.
Yeah.
Yes.
Just to go further, drill a little bit down into this point. Women vote as a percentage more often than anybody, right? This is
nationally, I think
that's right. So, is there then even less effect on women? So, if you have women who are voting more, and you're not seeing a correlation, then is there even less pull on women? Because they're a larger, sort of, they're naturally
motivated
to vote more often.
Yeah, I mean, these wouldn't let us.
Yeah, this
know
wouldn't.
That.
I mean, this kind of method wouldn't do that because the mechanics of it don't let us look at that. It would be interesting to try to figure out if there's a way to pull that out. I'm not sure what it would look like. Maybe it would just be an interaction.
Yeah,
we could try it.
Just because if you think about if you sort of step back from what you're saying, right? You're saying that men produce more content, engage with more content.
Mm-hmm.
But women still vote more.
Right, but in fact, the engaging with the content here doesn't matter. We're controlling for that. That doesn't matter.
Right.
So maybe if we interacted those, the online some of the online variables.
Yeah, it would be interesting to try it with. Yeah. It would be worth probably going back. If we were to do this, it would be worth going back and looking more at the descriptives of the population to pull out plausible stories like that and then go in and specifically look at those interactions, which I don't know if we did very much. I don't think we did very much of when we first generated this. Yeah. So that's
a
great point.
We were very much led by the literature. We wanted to test what the literature said and see how can we measure
how we stack up
and then how does this compare.
But that's a great point. That's a good one to think about. So we should go back to that one.
Right.
Questions. One is, of all the things you didn't measure, what's the thing you really wish you had a measure of? And the second one is getting back to the voting and political participation thing. So I understand the logic of having different determinants of civic engagement and political engagement being driven by different things. But my prior assumption would have been that political engagement and voting would be more or less linear. It would be on the same trajectory, and that the determinants of the both would be similar as well. Do you have a theory or a hypothesis as to why they're not the same? Or
I mean, to go backwards, I think the second part of your question is actually goes back to the question Momin raised too, which is, and I mean, beyond the fact that I think they are qualitatively different in American society, I don't have a good story there. I don't know if you have more to. I mean, they're not perfectly correlated. So there's definitely, in terms of looking at the correlations between those two, it doesn't line up exactly. So it's definitely not something that is sort of there in the, even if, you know, in a certain way we can sort of say from a high level, like political engagement of these different kinds should be created more or less equally. It's apparently not. So that's sort of the best I can do, unfortunately. I don't know. Beyond that, in terms of measures that we wish we had, do you have any that?
I'm actually pretty proud of this data set and how much we do have information.
It's pretty amazing, yeah.
I think with the internet variables, I'd love to have more detail there. Like, I, as I said, like, I would love to know what's going on social network sites that matters. I think it'd be interesting to have maybe more, although I do think the OPC, the Online Political Cognitive Engagement, does actually capture a lot. So you could have more nuance, but since in some cases it doesn't matter, I don't know if it would help.
No.
But I do think that it would be interesting to see more of the nuances there, especially with the with some of these newer technologies. But do you have thoughts, or does other people, we'd love to hear, you know.
The other question I was going to ask is do people look at the impact of social networks on voting behavior and political?
There's been some other work on that.
As in just like when your networks are voting. And I mean, I'm sure there's literature on this. I don't think we really looked at that here. Although, right, so I guess that would be another type of data point that could be interesting. But that's really hard. I don't know the literature on that to know how well people would report on whether people in their families or friends are voting. So I'm not sure how good those data would be.
I mean, there's definitely been other work on it. And actually, I think, hasn't Josh Pasek has done some stuff on this, if I'm not mistaken.
Maybe.
I could go back and find some others if you wanted to talk about it later. But the... yeah, I mean, there's definitely some reason to believe that networks would have an interesting role there. In part, I think there's been research on political information and voting behavior. And I think voting behavior does... Well, I don't want to speculate because I don't remember off the top of my head, but...
I guess one more some interesting would be relationships there. Maybe more nuances about the political action outcome and what are we measuring. So we're measuring it really in the traditional ways that people have measured it in the literature, but it would be interesting... to get a little bit more nuanced of what are these, because isn't one of our measures, do you discuss recent news about, or is that the civic, no, that's actually our civic engagement
that's
measure.
A civic engagement outcome measure.
But like more detail of, well, what kind of news exactly are you discussing with people?
What or current events mean?
What are maybe some other measures of political action that we don't have in there that could be interesting?
Yeah, I mean, there are two definitely that I could think of, which is one specific to this election was social network site behavior specifically around political campaigns or candidates or events, because I think there was a lot of that in the 2008 election. It was a major focus of both campaigns, and so it'd be interesting to know that. And the other has to do with sort of consumption practices, because actually going back to some of the literature that we've looked at, one of the interesting ways that it seems like younger Americans participate more than older Americans and in different ways is that they tend to engage in politically motivated consumption. So not shopping at insert whatever store is doing something politically irresponsible here, because you don't agree with their politics is something that people do a lot, younger people do a lot in particular. And that was something that we don't have any data on here, but which would be interesting to incorporate into some of these questions.
And I just thought of one more, which is that we don't really have measures of other types of media usage.
Yeah.
So we don't know how are they engaging with television and political information. And so that, I think that would also be very interesting and helpful to have, just if nothing else as a control or as a comparison. So for some other outcomes, I've had data like that in the data set, but not for political information. So I think that could be interesting. Nicole.
A better measure for this population about for kind of true political involvement, voting, or these political activities. And I guess what I'm thinking about is that on one hand, we think of voting as a pretty low threshold and kind of donating money, and these may be kind of a higher order. On the other hand, for this population, what I really liked about a lot of those measures is that you're not distinguishing between online versus offline. You're not kind of privileging offline, but so it could be, you know, so you don't specify that with the measure. So on one hand, thinking about this kind of rhetoric of slacktivism, you know, with these young people, so you can do a lot of these things without leaving the comfort of your, you know, dorm room, right? But then voting, you have to pretty much actually go somewhere. So is that, was that useful to think about that kind of, I mean, what do you think is more important for a vibrant democracy, for these young people, voting or these other forms of political action that you talk about there?
I mean, I think part of it is that it's not an either or, and I think that's partly what, and there is a literature that's so more and more people are writing about this, that these are both important, and that we need to recognize that they're both important. And that's partly why we have these other measures, and we mm-hmm. look at this as well. I mean, I think the answers Aaron gave to the previous question addressed a little bit some of what you're asking about, like what are other things of action? And some of it might be the inaction of not buying, you know, not supporting certain stores or whatnot. It's one of those things where I'm also open to, would love to hear feedback on what people think we should be asking about on these things.
Well, yeah, I guess I wasn't so much thinking the measures, just kind of thinking about these two forms of activity.
I mean, I think it's really important to recognize the deliberation, for example, about public deliberation about these topics is really important. Mm-hmm. And especially with local politics can be extremely important, things that are going on in your neighborhood, in your local environment, that for people to be talking about those things, that can be a big deal. And that let's recognize that as a type of political action as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's something, for example, that's really not, I mean, in the sort of other research that we're looking at when we design this, a lot of it doesn't differentiate between national and local level politics. That would be a really interesting dimension. I'm sure there is work on it. I'm just not.
Yeah, so this is, I couldn't remember the title. It's called Talking Together, book that came out a couple of years ago, Jacobs Cook and Deli Carpini, where they have a lot of these other measures that I think is really helpful. So they talk about why it's important to go beyond just the voting and how it's their findings from nationally representative survey suggest that the situation is not as dire as some of the rhetoric would have us believe, that there are actually a lot of people out there talking and engaging. So we need to move away from just the very simplistic measures when we're looking at who's politically mm-hmm. active. Just voting, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
I wonder if one easy to measure variable for partisanship would be to split partisanship into two, one being an ideological question and the other being specifically a political party engagement question. Because I bet you if you decouple those, there are people who would say, consider themselves a moderate, but consider themselves very active in one or another party, which is a different measure. Because I may have a certain set of political beliefs, and if it's very far on one edge, it may cause me to step away from political activity because I might find it very frustrating.
Distasteful, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, in theory, that's in here, insofar as the political action, I mean, we include it as an aggregate measure, but the political action one does include things like volunteering for campaigns. In the civic engagement measures, we have things like joining organizations and clubs. And so in theory, some of that is in there. I mean, I'm not sure whether it would be, I mean, it'd be interesting to do more looking into it, whether or not it's possible to do it in the state is another question, but it would be interesting to do more looking into whether there is a population for whom that's a real distinction. And so far as like, maybe there are people who only engage at a kind of conceptual level. Like, I have very strong political beliefs, but I don't participate in any of these.
I mean, I also want to mention that our partisanship measure in particular did have an open-ended open-ended option, that if you didn't want to say that you were very liberal or liberal or moderate or very conservative, and then we recoded the open-ended, and people said things like, who cares, or I just don't give a crap, and that we considered the zero, right, so that they're not partisan in our book because they don't seem to care at all. So we actually, in that sense, are capturing certain people who wouldn't necessarily fall on that traditional measure of partisanship in our data set.
I'm just thinking if you look at, for example, very commonly asked questions recently have been asked to folks who've said, we support the Tea Party, and we support budgets, cutting budgets.
Mm-hmm.
But when asked on any one given measure, which one of those they support? They support none of them. And 70% or more support raising taxes on people who make $1 million a year, which is not the narrative picture of what the Tea Party stands for, but it's the data picture of what the groups that self-identify that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so those groups may not identify as liberal conservative, but will identify on some other scale, but yet have a...
Well, like in some of the examples that you didn't give from the recoding one, some of them did say things like communist.
which we recoded as strongly partisan or socialist. I mean, we consider that strongly partisan in that regard. Or there were definitely some libertarian self-identifiers. So I think
we're capturing a lot of that.
We're capturing a lot of it. I mean, yeah, it would be interesting to learn more about whether there are specific dimensions that would be missing in there. I don't know. I'm not sure what they would look like, but it's a good point.
Yeah. Robin?
Is often used rhetorically by people who are clearly partisan, but they call themselves moderate or independent. Most independents I seem to recall reading are pretty much for one party or the other, but they like to say they're independent because it sounds better. So there's also rhetorical
thing. Actually, the survey just technically it said middle of the road.
Yeah,
actually,
survey says middle of the road. Yeah, yeah,
that's actually what it said. Just so.
Yeah, it doesn't say independent or moderate.
It says middle
of
the road.
Yeah. There was, Doc, I think a while ago, you had an IRC question. Are there other IRC questions you want to chime in with? Do we steamroll
so
past that?
I'll tell you. It
was something about OLPC. If you do a search for OLPC.
Yeah, it's way back up there. Here.
Here we go.
To what degree,
okay, so the questions from the back channel are, to what degree would/might we extrapolate from our study and this literature at large that one laptop per child might better become a political action tool of the weak, not weak as in the current weak in news, but weak as in weapon of the strong, weapon of the weak. Second one.
Should we take that first?
Yeah, let's take that first one.
So
second one is the first one.
Is just okay. So first of all, we don't have non-internet users in this sample at all, right? So we can't. Our findings don't really speak to people who are not online at all. And I mean, first of all, they're not online, so we wouldn't be looking at internet measures except if we said zero for everything, because they're not doing anything online. So in that sense, where this sample is skewed towards the, I mean, people where internet might matter because they're users. So one could diversify the sample by adding non-users. So
it'd be hard in Chicago.
Right. Yeah. I mean, well, they're still non-users, but not in this age group for sure. That said, we do have some variation in internet experiences and abilities, but we do find that some, for example, skill matters in several of the outcomes. So insofar as skill matters, I mean, one of the critiques I have of one laptop per child is that program is that it's all about the hardware and it's not really about making sure that people learn how to use the technology. And so in and of itself, I'm not sure what it would change because we've shown that knowing how to use the technology matters. And so just giving people the hardware isn't necessarily what makes a difference.
Yeah.
And I mean, the fact that we have any variation would suggest that giving people the hardware is not
the only thing. Yeah.
Then we wouldn't, you know, we've controlled for that. And
right. Everybody has the hardware to some extent in this population.
We still find variation.
We still find variation. I mean, maybe another way to answer Scott's question would be what I would take away from this is that it would be interesting to design a more kind of narrowly specified, either experimental or something like that kind of study to try to see whether hardware alone makes a difference for disconnected populations. My suspicion is that based on what we find, I would suspect that you would not find that to be the case. But I wouldn't want to extrapolate just because of all the reasons Esther just said. So
you had your hand up earlier. Did we address your question?
Did we get
there?
Okay.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay.
Yes.
An anecdotal comment to that is someone at, I forget if she's at the Media Lab or the Comparative Media Studies program at MIT, did a documentary about the internet cafes that were open in, I think, Uruguay. And it showed that for age groups, depending on the age group, having access to hardware made a difference and didn't. The older people just didn't use it, girls just didn't use it, boys used it, in younger age groups for specific things.
Yeah, I mean,
I think
going,
you'd need to control for a lot of things.
Yeah, and going with that, I know, who was it at the Cyber Scholars meeting? Was it Leah Boelski and Mako Hill have done interesting work that it might not just be hardware, but what hardware?
Yeah.
That hardware may have gendered dimensions, or at least in the cases they were looking at with Arduino, definitely does have gendered dimensions to it. And so there might be design elements of, say, OLPC, for example, that might or might not tip the scales in one direction or another in that regard.
So other people, you had your hand up at some point, too. Any other questions or comments?
When you're talking about skill level, are you talking about people using laptops? In this age group, aren't they using mobile devices?
So just, so the skill question is a separate question.
Okay.
And I can tell you what that entails. In terms of, I'm sorry?
Do you want to go back up to the...
I don't think we have a slide about what
this is. Oh, okay. Sorry, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I do on almost every other presentation, but not this one. So in terms of the hardware and are they using mobile, we don't, the way we're taking that into consideration in this data set is our autonomy measure is a measure of the number of locations where you have access to the internet, which, so we asked, do you have access at home, at school, and computer and cafe, et cetera, et cetera. And so it's less about, do you have a desktop or a laptop? It's these number of locations, which presumably relates, because if you don't have a laptop or a mobile device, it's unlikely that you can say you could use it on the go. So that's where we try to capture that. I do have data about mobile uses in the data set. We didn't directly include it here. I have a whole separate paper where we look at some of those data. We show that people who have access to the web in more places are actually the ones who are most likely to also have access to the web on their phones. So it's rather than helping those who have fewer access locations go online, it's just perpetuating those who already have more access locations. As to the skill question, that's a specific 27-item variable where we ask people their level of understanding of different internet-related terms. I've done a lot of work in that domain, and that's what that skill variable is. So that's actually about understanding awareness of internet technology. That's what that captures. Thank you very much for all the great suggestions.
Yeah, thank you so much.